Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
I am going to talk to you about the beauty of brokenness, and ironically, my voice is like so it is. So I don't know if you noticed in that YouTube video, but 1992 is when that happened, and he did this video 3 years ago, and to this point, you know, just doing the math, that's 23 years, and he's still in that season. And I don't know if you guys know, but Bob Sorge is part of the IHOP International House of Prayer in Kansas City, and you know, and he's still walking through this. And because of his brokenness, so many things has happened that has brought fruit to others and just ministered to others. And so I'm just gonna, I remember he wrote a book called Envy, which I bought and I read, and that just marked me too, like as some other area in my life that I needed to work on. And so whenever brokenness happens, it's for a season, and it's not for an hour or a week, as we would hope it would be, but it's for years and months if you're lucky, but normally it's years. And so as I wonder about the life of Job, it's 42 chapters, and I'm wondering, like, it'll take us hours to read maybe, but how long did that actually happen in Job's life, you know? And let's just say or assume, like, one chapter is 1 year. That's 42 years of him walking through this and the Lord taking away and the Lord placing boils where he's, like, picking at himself in a corner. And it just amazes me that we, in our lives, when we come into a season of brokenness and it's just, like, maybe a day into it, we're like, oh, gosh, this is so hard. And we complain and we bicker because we live in a life where we can get whatever we want as soon as we want it. And if we don't, we complain. That's the first thing we do. We complain, we whine, and it's only been like maybe an hour and our food hasn't come out or something like that. And so in this, I really hope to encourage those who are in a season of brokenness that the Lord breaks through and the Lord gives. And the reason for a season of brokenness is just for your good. And whenever I calculated that, well, what if Job's life took 42 years? It reminded me of the Israelites walking in the wilderness for 40 years as well. And so when I went back to that, it says, hey, today if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts, as in the rebellion on the day of testing in the wilderness, where your fathers put me to the test and saw my works for 40 years. And that was in Hebrews. And that is exactly it. When you're in a season of brokenness, you got two routes where you actually submit and you let the Lord do whatever he wants to do in your life, or you can harden your heart. And that's where those are two separate routes, but those are so vital, because one is you go deeper into the love of the Lord and the other is you fall away. I mean, you can only keep hot for a certain amount of time, and then boom, you're done, you're gone. And, you know, offense arises or something happens to where you no longer have a believing heart. It's, ooh, sorry. That was not good. Okay, so it's like, take care, you know. Guard your heart from an unbelieving heart, because that leads you away from the living God. And so what do? We exhort one another every day so that we will keep our hearts from the deceitfulness of sin, so that we won't fall in and we won't slide away, but we actually enter in what the Lord has intended for us, instead of unable to enter in, because that's what happened to the Israelites. Another reason why they walked so long is he had already promised that generation, you will not enter to the promise that I have given you, because you have hardened your hearts so hard that now you have an unbelieving heart. So, you know, you're not going to enter in because of that. And then the spoiler. So don't harden your hearts as in the rebellion. Because as I read it, I was like, the rebellion. And right now there's this big thing about Star Wars. I was like, I know the rebellion, that's Star Wars. So I made my own meme. And so, what happened to Darth Vader? He hardened his heart. The little Jedi master, he hardened his heart. And then he became this guy, forever known as Luke, I'm your father. Okay, and so he became a really bad guy. And of course, he doesn't succeed. And of course, he falls away. And, you know, don't be like Darth Vader. So, continuing on, this is also another reason, or my plug-in for a community life. How you stay in the game, or how you stay in the path of righteousness and the path of the truth and the light, is you consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Again, out of Hebrews 10, 24, 25. And I don't think it's ironic that it's found in Hebrews, the same chapter as the the Israelites walking through that wilderness. But it's because in this community that we live in, we always harp on the community life about leaning onto one another. And I've heard a lot of people, you know, even myself, when I was walking through that darkest season of my life, saying, where is this community? You know, I don't see them. I don't feel them. But it was because my own pride and my own thought of, well, they're supposed to ask. And that's not true. In a community, you actually have to tell us. We can't read minds. Yes, some people are prophetic, but a lot of us are just plain old dumb. We don't know, because we're so self-involved in our own life that if you don't raise your hand and say, I need help, of course we're going to leave you alone, because we have no clue. But that's what community life is. It's here to keep you safe, to keep you in the running, to keep you burning strong for the Lord. And so all the rules that we have put in isn't supposed to offend you, though it does offend some. It's put here so that it keeps you safe. There is a reason why we make you go to a 2-hour, and well, not make you, but you know, that we urge you, go and sign up for 1 2-hour prayer life. So then that you can have 1 2-hour session where you can sit and you can read the word, or you can enter in into a time where the Lord can speak to you, so you last another day. Or for some of us, we can last another hour, and it's to just revitalize us and refresh us. And so I kind of thought of it like, hey, it's like the gym. When you go and you sign up for the gym, they're like, they show you around and they show you all the benefits, and you sign up and you pay for it, but you don't ever go. And so you don't ever get the benefits of it. And it's the same thing with community life. We tell you to, you come in, and so you do. You sign up, you become part of this church. But then if you don't come and go to the meetings, or go to small group, or go to the prayer room, of course you're not going to feel it, because you're not partaking in everything that we're offering. And so you're not going to feel it. You're not going to interact. You're not going to meet. You're not going to feel the community life, because you're not part of it. And I think that's one of the things that this community will, you know, will put our arms around you, embrace you, but we won't force it. It's like something that you have to embrace, and that you have to be willing to take in, and so that we can actually love on you the way that you need it to be loved. And so, again, So, this reminds me of a so sorry, I went too long. So this one is Romans 12:2, where it says, rejoice in hope, be patient in tribulation, and be constant in prayer, and contribute to the needs of the saint, and seek to show hospitality. Just to say, whenever someone is hurt and someone is walking through a season of just hardship, you know, seek to show hospitality. Give a reaching hand. I know we're all busy, but, you know, text messages go a long way, a phone call. Because I know when I just knew that someone thought of me it spoke volumes. And if someone's just praying for me, even though it's like a text prayer, or their prayer could be, oh, help them. I mean, at least you're praying for me. I mean, that's a lot. And it doesn't take a lot, but that means a lot to the receiving end, especially if they're in a season where they need help the most. And so, again, it says be patient in tribulation. And patience is only whenever it's for a while or for a season or for a long time, not for a minute or, you know, for an hour, but it's for months, even years. And so constant in prayer, asking the Lord to break in, asking the Lord to give you a little bit of blessing here and there to keep you alive, to keep you going. And I don't know what's wrong with this thing, but I think it's backfiring on me or something. But anyways, it reminds me of this meme that I saw that it says, how we walk with the broken speaks louder than how we sit with the great. Like when someone's broken and you have to see their weakness and you don't judge, but how do you sit with them? Do you weep with them? Do you encourage them? Or do you just let them go to the side and let them figure it out? I mean, it's easy to sit with someone or walk with someone when they're on their high, but when they're going down into the dumps, how will you walk with them? Are you going to give up on them, or are you going to take them by their hand? And yes, maybe spoon feed them if they need to, but what will we do? Will we shy away just because we're busy, or will we take the time? And even though we have tons of things on our plates, you can still, and the Lord even, you know, sometimes put it in your heart to have a heart for them, to help them out, because we all know we've been in that season of darkness, and we've been in the trials and the tribulation, and all the help that we can get, you know, again, just helps us survive for one more day. So why the season of brokenness? It's for the testing of our faith. The Lord, it says in Deuteronomy 13:3, for the Lord your God is testing you to know whether you love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. And the Lord, again, is the one who brought this, and the Lord is the only one who can take it away. So count it all as joy, as James 1:14 said, or 1-4. My brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let the steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. And again, if you notice where I highlighted and underlined, when you meet trials of various kinds, so as you're ending one, you know, and you're like, yes, success, I stayed alive, you're about to enter another one. You know, it's like different season, different reasons. You know, one reason could be a testing of your faith. Another one could be a testing of, you know, your faith in finances, or your test in love. How do you love people? Or your test in patience. So in anything, the Lord always sends multiple of trials. Because, again, like, I know some trials, I'm like, man, I did that horrible. And the Lord or the Spirit's like, don't worry, you're going to get retested. I'm like, great. You know, it's just going to be totally looking different. It'll hit you from an angle you never expect. But when you're in it and you actually seek the Lord, like, what are you trying to do? What are you telling me? The Lord's going to say, oh, yeah, you remember that retest? Here it is. And it's an open book, meaning go to the Bible, read what you're supposed to do, read what you need to do to actually survive again. And so continuing on. For by the grace given to me, I say to everyone or among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. Romans 12:3. And this spoke to me a lot whenever, again, I was in my season of brokenness, or the darkest season of my life, where I looked at others. And I think you've heard of it, where Theodore Roosevelt says, the biggest thief is comparison. That's a thief of joy. And I would remember when we were going through the season of, like, Anna in her most, I mean, you look at her and you even though you love us, you wonder, like, what are they thinking? And we were in that season, and you know, Andy was getting hit hard, I was getting hit hard, and I would always look about and say, why can't I be so-and-so? Like, I take that season anytime. You know, like, I would willingly trade spots. Why is ours so hard? But I think that's relative to everyone. Everyone's season is different for a reason, because the Lord knows how to hit you and how to hit you in a certain spot to speak to you, because he knows you will bend your knee if I hit you like this. But for me, it would be a different way. And that goes with everyone. It's like he knows how to speak to you in certain ways to get your attention. So the big thing is, hey, you know, don't think you're yourself higher than anyone else. Just, we're all in the same race. We all got our trials. And if you guys just think with a sober judgment and knowing that, hey, whatever I get from the Lord is because, if you see it again, God has a sign, meaning God placed it, like for Andrew, he gets this because he knows Andrew's heart. So he's like, well, Andrew gets this amount of faith, and he's going to be tested this way in his faith because that is for him. And just like he knitted us in our mother's womb, he so, again, knitted the faith trials and tribulations in the way that would speak to us the most, that would grow us the most, and get us there the fastest. And, you know, as I was thinking on the brokenness, like, okay, so why, again, it's to test our faith, but to what else? I think it's also to humble us. Because in Ecclesiastes 3:18, it says, I said in my heart with regard to the children of man that God is testing them, that they may see that they themselves are but beasts. And so this one's going to be a long example. But I remember, again, as Anna's face was clearing and we saw light at the end of the tunnel, and Andy's eczema was like lifting just a little, and I was like, this is it. This is it. And then, boom, I get hit with eczema. And then I get hit with, I'm pregnant. I was like, seriously? And so as my eczema was flaring, I couldn't eat anything because I would just react. My skin was on fire. So any type of clothing, I was like, it just burned. Like, I couldn't. And I still had to go to work. I still had to do the life. I still, you know, went and did everything. I still met and, you know, I didn't sleep. I couldn't even shower without pain. And then I'm holding or hanging on by a thread. I'm still teaching, and then I lose it with the kid. But I don't think anything much of it, because that's what I always do. Oh, well, not saying I always lose it with a kid, but I've done it before. And I mean, I didn't technically do anything to the kid, but I thought nothing of it until there was a parent-principal conference. And so, you know, again, like, the principal warned me, like, this parent was really upset. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I remember meeting this parent, and she was really, you know, nice and cordial. So I was thinking, oh, I'll smooth things over. I'll just tell her what was my intention behind it, apologize, go low. And, you know, I've done this before. It always ended well, so I'll be good. And so I went in, sitting down, started off with apology. You know, I just want to apologize first about what happened. And then it went way south. I mean, I was sitting there. I almost peed in my pants. And I had to take a lashing, like, short of, you know, explicative words. She was calling me out. She was threatening my job. She was just, you know, just horrible things were just getting lashed out. And I was sitting there. And I remember my principal sitting there, and I was like, is she going to stop this? No. Is she? No. Okay. And so I just sat there, and I was just like, there is no, I knew it from the, I mean, her eyes spoke it all. Like, there was so much hatred, and there was no getting through that, that I was speechless when she was like, what do you have to say? And I was just like, nothing, because there is nothing I can say to change, to make amends, to tell you how sorry that I am. I can already tell there is nothing that I can say. And of course, that just made her even more angry. And so the only thing that actually happened, and I was waiting for to see what my principal would say, and all she did was excuse me, like, okay, now you're excused. And I was like, okay. And so as I left, of course, I ran to the first dark corner that I could do and cry, and because I was like, I don't know what else to do. And at that moment, I had a choice to be offended and claim the victim. You know, as a lot of people, as I was telling them, they're like, oh, you were the victim. That's true, but I think the best thing that I learned about this was I was a beast, because the Lord revealed to me at that point how I felt when that lady was yelling at me was how my students felt when I reprimanded them or when I spoke to them harshly. That's how they felt. I might have not been so mean like that lady, but that's how I made them feel. And then boom, I like was weeping even more because I was like, I didn't know. And he's like, yeah, you didn't. Now you do. And right then and there, I was very grateful for that lady, though I don't want to meet that lady again. Because, I mean, she was Amazonic. I mean, huge lady. And, like, for real, I think a lot of you guys here may be afraid of her as well. But again, it was one of those things where the Lord, I go, Lord, why? Why did you have this happen? And this was like, right after I got awarded Teacher of the Year. So it was kind of like, dang, do I really deserve that award? And so it kind of tainted it a bit. But the Lord was saying, what you thought you were doing that was great isn't so great. And so my heart hurt in that. And so the only way for him to actually wake me up was to have that happen. And for me to actually, I think it was the grace of the Lord to actually let me see why he did that. And so in saying that, it's in that pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. My pride went down that day. And I'm glad that it did, because I didn't see it. And so when it went down, I was able to, I can honestly say now, like, I still have to reprimand my kids, but I go about it as such a different route. And it was the move and the kiss of the Lord and more empathy and more, you know, being questioned, like more, it's a softer side, but still standing the line and holding the line and making sure that they know I'm not going to bend the line just because of what they say, but I'm going to hold to it. But I don't have that fear and anger in them. It's more of fear and love. And that's exactly what the Lord is going to show us in the season of brokenness. It's like, hey, come to me and love me, and I will show you, you know, what I can do. And that's also another reason for the season of brokenness, because a lot of the times, like, this is a good thing. It just literally happened yesterday. So my two daughters are in soccer, if you can even call it that. So they go and they play with the ball. And there's a game, and we have been undefeated until yesterday. We're done. And this team, they called them the Polar Bears because they were white. And they were killing us. I mean, 11-0. They were killing us. And every time one of our team comes really close, all the parents are like, go, 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 go. And then they hit it, and of course it doesn't go into the goal. And we're all like, oh. And, you know, and as the other team is just dinging them in, I mean, they look like professional 3- and 4-year-olds. I'm serious. So I was like, what do they feed these kids? And then finally, this one girl, her name is Harlow. She's like our team player, not Anna Rave. But this girl comes and she scores a goal. And I promise you, like, even the other team was cheering us. They were like, yes! And that one goal was so much sweeter than all the other goals that we have and all the other wins that we did previous to yesterday's game. And that one goal meant so much more. And that's the same thing with the Lord. You know, we're beaten, we're broken down, and, you know, we're at our weakest. We look ugly because we've been crying, snot's dripping, and we barely can, like, even open up a Bible because we don't even feel like it. But we don't quit, and we just raise our hand and we say, I love you. And then up there, the Lord's like, yes! And he's so proud of that. And he's like, you didn't quit on me. You still love me. Even though I wounded you, you still have hope. You still have love. You still have faith. And he's so excited for that. And you're going to get tons of rewards and riches and glory in heaven. We can't see it, but you will get it. For every tear, for every trial, for every tribulation, there's going to be so much riches and glory if we just stay that course. And again, the Lord gives us to it, but the Lord will also take this season and he will heal it. And as in Isaiah 30, 26, it says, "Moreover, the light of the moon will be as the light of the sun, and the light of the sun will be sevenfold as the light of 7 days, in the day when the Lord binds up the brokenness of his people and heals the wounds inflicted by his blow." We always blame the devil for it, but the devil can't do anything unless the Lord says yes. Even in Job, as the devil's like, "Oh, I'm just looking around the world," and the devil's like, "I'm just seeing," and he's like, "Hey, did you consider Job?" Like, Jesus, or, you know, well, they're all the same. So the Lord throws Job under the bus and says, "Go to Job. Why don't you mess with him?" And the same thing, the Lord messes with us, gives us the blows, because he wants to test our love for him, test our faith. Will we endure? Maybe it's just to get us ready for the tribulation, where we're going to be picked, prodded, poked. Who knows what's going to happen to us? And it's coming real soon. And I just count it. I do count all the trials as joy, because it helps me stay one step stronger. Like, you know, lifting weights, I got one more pound. You know, looking at me, I don't think I can do much, but I got one more pound because of that one more trial that I got on my belt. And so, again, the promise of the Lord, and this one's a long one. Sorry about that. So I'll try to read that right there. It's Deuteronomy 8, 2 through 10. "And you shall remember the whole way that the Lord your God has led you these 40 years in the wilderness, that he might humble you, testing you to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. And he humbled you and let you hunger." And I'm going to stop right there. He let us hunger. So he purposely is starving us. He purposely humbles us. He purposely tests us. But he continues this and says, "I fed you with manna." That means, like, you barely get anything. Manna is like wafers. You know, it's not a juicy steak or an ice cream shake. It's this tasteless thing that just keeps your body going for one more day. And he gives it daily to them. And so this reminds me, you know, you're in the season of brokenness and you think, "I can't go any longer." But then you do. That's the good news. You do. You go longer. And then when you're walking in the wilderness, you don't see it. I remember Andy literally shook me like Anna because I was breaking down. I was being such a baby. If y'all could see it, I was like, "I can't do it." And, you know, and then, like, he really did shake me. And I was kind of like, I was shaking. I was like, "You just shook me. And how dare you?" And then he was like, "Get a hold of yourself." And I was like, "Okay." And he goes, "You can do this." I was like, "I know." And then he shook me. I was like, "You can do it. Okay." And he would just remind him. He's like, "You will live through this." And I was like, "I really don't want to." He's like, "No, but you're going to." I was like, "But I don't want to." And that's exactly the Lord, you know, thankfully giving me Andy to just spur me on and say, "You will do this." Speaking life to me. "Yes, this is horrible, but you will survive. You will get through this. I know it's hard. You can't see it. It'll get easier. It will get easier." And so I just had to remind myself. I didn't believe it. I just said yes so he would stop shaking me. But I didn't believe it. I was like, "Whatever, not right now." I was like, "Just leave me alone." And so that he was basically telling me this scripture right here. This is the Lord testing you. This is the Lord humbling you. You're acting like a big baby right now. And you're crying and you're weeping and you're complaining. And the Lord's humbling you. You thought you were really strong. You're really not. Because the Lord just took one thing away from you, your skin, and you're falling like a baby. And I was like, "Yes, I am. I can say that." And so as I continue on, it said, "Which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord." And that's it. How did I live through that season of darkness? I recalled the scripture of the Lord, just holding him to that line. "You don't lie. You said in your word you were going to do this. I'm waiting. You said you will break through. You said you are near to the brokenhearted. Where are you?" And I just kept I mean, I was, if you could see me down the hall of the school, like everyone knew, you know, I would not talk. I was literally holding my arms from scratching, and I was like, he is faithful. He is faithful. And I get just, and I said, just a little bit longer. Just, it'll all be worth it. It'll all be worth it. And I'm just murmuring this to myself as I go through day in and day out, as I'm trying to hold it together as much as I can. And again, that's what I lived through, because I couldn't eat anything. I really couldn't. And if I did, I paid for it severely. And so I was afraid to eat. My clothes, and this one says, your clothing did not wear out on you, and your foot did not swell these 40 years. Just saying that he keeps you alive just enough so that you would continue on, that he would give you just enough. He doesn't give you, you know, he'll give you everything you need, because he said he will provide, but that doesn't mean luxury, you know? And I think that's a lot of what we think, especially in the Western Christianity. We think, oh, if you're blessed, you're living large. You got that nice Mercedes Benz or whatnot. But that's not it, you know? And the Lord wants you to know, hey, when you become a Christian, you take up that cross and you walk it. And so as, again, continuing on 40 years, I highlighted that again because it is for a season. It's for the rest of our walk through Christ. In this life, in this world, until we see Jesus, we are going to walk out trials and tribulation. And so it says, know then in your heart that as a man disciplines his son, the Lord your God disciplines you. Man, I know I spank my children a lot throughout the day. I try to spare it, but I mean, it's repeatedly, because you know, you tell them once and then literally 10 seconds later, not even 10, 2 seconds, they forget, and you have to do it again. And it's the same thing with us. We're just bigger, and the Lord still disciplines us. And he's like, just like you do to your kid, I'm doing it to you. And so I think Bob Sorge said it the best. You don't want God to leave you alone. If God leaves you alone, that means you win way. I mean, it's not even, you know, even the devil will leave you alone, because he succeeded. He has now gotten you on the off the beaten path, and you're down a wrong way, and he's like, oh, got that one, so I'm gonna go and mess with someone else that is actually going on the right path. And so it says, So you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God by walking in his way and by fearing him. And then this is where it gets good. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and of springs, flowing out in the valleys and hills, a land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive trees and honey, a land in which you will eat bread without scarcity, in which you will lack nothing, a land whose stones are iron, and out of those hills, of whose hills you can dig copper, and you shall eat and be full, and you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. And this only comes after what? The testing, the humbling, the 40 years. And that's the seasons of brokenness. And again, even when you feel like you can't go on, or you think you're going to give up, this one, I remember seeing this one first from Weezy Young. She said it was one of her favorite verses, and I thought I never heard of it, or I wouldn't say never, but it's not one of those popular ones that you always think of. But when I read it, it's so true. And it says, for thus says the one who is high and lifted up, who inhabits eternity, whose name is holy, I dwell in the high and holy place, and also with him who is of a contrite and lowly spirit. So those of you who are thinking you're counted out, you're not even worthy, he's like, hey, I'm in the high and holy place, but I'm also with you. The one who is the underdog, who is considered out, who wants to do right, the contrite heart. Oh my goodness. I had to ask Andy, what does that mean? It sounds fancy. But the contrite heart is like, you so want to do good, and you so want to do much more. Your heart longs for it and aches for it, but you're just not able to. Or you don't fit, you feel like you don't fit, you know, the standard. And then so now you're counted as out, or you feel like you're counted as out. But the Lord's like, no, 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 no. I'm going to revive your heart. And I'm going to not contend forever, meaning he's going to lift that season of brokenness from you. And it says, nor will I always be angry, for the spirit would grow faint before me and the breath of life that I made. And because of the iniquity of his unjust gain, I was angry. I struck him. Again, the Lord gives us these seasons. And so it said, I hid my face and was angry, but he went on backsliding in the way of his own heart. I have seen his ways, but I will heal him. I will lead him and restore comfort to him and his mourners, creating the fruit of the lips. Peace, peace to the far and to the near, says the Lord, and I will heal him. And that's the promise that you can hold on to. The promise that it will get better. Because then again, he said, I will heal you. He struck you. He's going to heal you. And he'll restore you. Because if he's the one that did it, he's going to be the one that lifts it. Not the community. The community is just going to spur you on to keep going. To keep going for another day. To not lose hope. To buy you ice cream. To buy you a brownie. Something. Something to cheer you up. But the real person who's going to move is the Lord. And again, the length of the season is what I'm trying to harp on. It's not short by all means. We wish it was, but it's long for a reason. And it's to build character, to steadfastness, faithfulness. And so it says, blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial. For when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him. Do not be deceived, my beloved brothers. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. James 1:12, 16 through 17. And then Proverbs 16:31. Gray hair is a crown of glory. It is gained in a righteous life. So again, this is years and years. This is a lifetime. So, I mean, I think Brad said it last week or something, or yesterday. I don't know. But, you know, Jeremy. He tricked you, okay? When you fell in love, you know, love makes you do dumb things, but it's a great thing. The Lord made you fall in love with him. Little did you know you signed up for a lifetime of trials, of hurt, of cleaning all your fleshiness and all your dirtiness and filth. I mean, yes, we are made pure and white. And, with, you know, our sins, he covered our sins. But that doesn't mean, you know, we are just righteous all of a sudden. It's like the snap of the fingers. No, you get dunked in that water. And when you're lifted up, you know, it doesn't mean you're perfect. You have to walk it out. And as you walk it out, again, I'm going to just harp on the community life. That's why everyone is in a small group, so you're accounted for, so that we can hold your hand and we can walk together and skip. And if one of you falls, at least you're holding someone's hand, and they might fall a little too, but we'll yank you out. It's like a chain, you know, and it's a lot harder to pull a whole chain than just to flick one person down and be over with. And so again, every good gift is from the Lord, even when the good gift hurts. And so, I'm going to kill this little thing. All right, in Romans 8:28, I thought I was being like tech savvy, not really. Okay, Romans 8:28, and we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. Even if we change, he does it. You know, even if we lose faith, even when we doubt, he does it. The crazy thing is, he knows what's going to happen at the end. We don't. We wish we did. I don't know if it's better. It's kind of like watching a good movie, and you're like, oh, I know this is a good movie. And I'm pretty sure, you know, like Avengers, they're going to win, but how? Like, I mean, they're getting defeated. Those big old monsters coming from outer space, they're pretty vicious. How are they going to do it? How? And then, you know, it goes on the side and they defeat them in a way that you never saw. And I think it's the same thing with each and everyone's story. You think it's going to go one way and the Lord's like, I'll just let you think that. And then boom, it goes south. or it goes way the other direction. You never saw it coming. And then in hindsight, again, you're like, man, that was good. I don't want to go back, but that was good. You know, that's like in my season, like, I don't ever want to go back to how Anna looked. Oh, that was so hard. And I was debating whether to put her picture in, but I know I would just lose it. I mean, Kathleen knows the last time I did, I had to hand her the mic. I was like, oh, Kathleen, say this for me. Because that was so hard. I remember that season, you know, most of you guys walked it with us. And just the stares that we got, we would I don't know if it was just, we were just blinded or what, but we would still take her out. We still do life with her. We would still go to meetings. We would still do things. We wouldn't hide her in the house, but we'd still take her out. And the stares that we would get and, you know, the whispers, and we can hear it. It's like, I don't know, like humans think like ears stop listening or something, but they would say some vicious things like, look at her face. You know, and the kids, man, they're brutally honest. But they're kids, and so they just say it, not knowing, like, what's with her face, Mom? And then you hear the mom go, shh. And so whenever her face actually did clear up, and we actually heard someone goes, look how cute she is. Andy and I both looked at each other, and we're all weeping. We're like, ooh, those are much better words now. Like, we can't get enough of it whenever someone says how cute our children are. We're like, hee-hee. And then especially with Anna, just because of her situation, and you know, we still can't get enough of it because of what has happened before, and I think we treasure it a lot more. And I also remember telling Amy Stroop, you know, having a breakdown one day, like, I just want to be able to kiss her cheeks, you know, because it was just so like open sores and gushing out stuff. And I remember Amy going, you're going to, and I was like, yeah, like, you know, in my heart, I was like, okay, yeah, but I couldn't see it. I couldn't because of all the sores and I just couldn't. I was like, man, I don't know if I can, but okay, I'll believe what you say. And the Lord did it, and like, you know, now I just smother her with kisses, and I have to remember to do the same with Ava, because she's looking at me, and she's like, me, and so I'll kiss her too, but I just do so much more to Anna, because there was such a long period, over a year, where I couldn't, just because of the quality, or I don't know what word I'm looking for, but just her face was just not in that state. And so faith is believing beyond a doubt, you know, believing even when you can't see it, you have that belief in your heart. And I love how the Lord has placed that hope. And I see, you know, in this church, they put this, I've never noticed it till today, but it says hope, you know, like the Lord will fill you with hope because hope will take you so far. And they say love is the strongest because love is, it will go beyond hope and beyond faith, because that love for the Lord and that love for whatever you have, the stronger that love is, the stronger that it will push you to just continue on. And so as you guys have read in John 20:29, blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. John 20:29, I will be forever marked with this verse at the One Thing conference. I think it's in the year 2013, that whenever Andy and I went, for some reason, we're just crazy. I think we're just crazy and we're stubborn. We think we could just continue to do everything. So I make my 3 gallons of sweet potatoes so we can go, because that's all Anna can eat. And we go, and of course we can go to none of the sessions, but we eat like crazy. We go to the gift shop and we do everything. And so one night, one of the Micah watches our kids for us in the hotel. And so we steal away some time. And so we go to, of course, the bookstore first, just to get our t-shirts and everything else. And this one girl is doodling on a little sticky or a little pad paper, and it just looked pretty. So I was like, ooh, that's pretty. And she's like, you want it? I was like, yes, I want it. And so I took it from her, she gave it to me, I didn't say that. So she gives it to me, and of course, you know, me thinking I can resell this thing if she gets famous, like, hey, can you sign it? So, and then, so she signs it. And then later on, we go into the prayer room. And Andy goes, "Hey, what did that thing say?" I was like, "Oh, that's right. I didn't even read it." And so I opened it up, and this verse was there. And I just started weeping. And Andy looks, and he's like, "Dang, what's happening to you?" And then I give it to him, and he's like, "Ooh, that's good." And I was like, because, you know, Anna's face was still at its worst. And I still believe, like, I mean, I hear of the healing. I went to the healing rooms, and we're all like, I'm just waiting for that fast blink. We wake up, and she's healed, and she's clear, and she's perfect. And it wasn't the case. And my hope kept getting deferred. My heart kept getting sick. But the Lord gave me this verse. And again, this is a man does not live by bread alone, but by the word of God. And I kept on saying, I'm blessed, even though it doesn't look like it, because I believe. Because I have this faith that everyone calls dumb, he counts it as being blessed. And I'm a success. Not because I have a perfect life. Not because I don't sin. Man, I sin. I mean, this past weekend, if you knew what I did. Like, I was just, you know, angry at Andy for no reason. I really was wanting to throw fits this weekend. And then, but of course, I repented. I haven't apologized. Sorry, honey. And so it's just one of those things where the Lord, I don't get it. Like, to me, I mean, I'm pretty cutthroat because just the way that we live, you know, I would make 100 on a test. And my dad was like, "Oh, I made 100 on the test, Dad. Okay, how many people did?" "Oh, 10. Then everyone could. That just is not good." Or, you know, and that's just the way that I grew up. It's not good enough. It's not good enough. So whenever Andy goes, "You're a success," I'm like, "Whatever." And he's like, "No, you're a success." And I was like, "Okay, you're a success. Okay, say it with me. I'm a success." And it's one of those things where truly you are a success. If you love God, you're still running this race. You're a success. It's like, yay. But don't get too prideful, because you know what happened. You're still a beast, though. And so it's like that balance. You swing this way. "I'm so horrible." And the Lord's like, "No, you're a success." You're like, yay. Oh, watch out for that pride. Boom. And then you get centered again. And so I think it's just a fun ride with the Lord. It ebbs and it flows. I wouldn't have it any other way. I wouldn't want to relive any of the seasons that he put me through, because they were just broken and dark. And again, the light at the end of the tunnel is his word, his promises. And another one that I love, this was in my first season of brokenness, before I knew the prayer room, before Andy, where I was walking this by myself. I mean, I have been walking with the Lord for 10 years, but I wouldn't even count the first two, because they were rough. I mean, if you saw me and you're like, "You call yourself..." Yeah, I look back and I was like, well, no wonder my sister doesn't, like, see it, because I was hitting the walls. I was really angry. And the Lord used that, because he reminds me, as there's new believers, "Hey, remember your first 2 years? It was ugly." And I have to remember that, too, as I encounter people that are entering the Lord, that, hey, they have to walk out kind of what you walked out 10 years ago. And so the one that helped me in that first season of darkness where I had no community was Psalm 34:18, where it said, "The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit." He is near. We can't see him, but he is so close. He's like uncomfortably close right next to you. Hopefully not right now. But he's right in your face, and he's just waiting. He's waiting for us to just embrace him and let him in. But he's not going to force it. That's the great thing about the Lord. He doesn't force it, because who would ever want to force love upon anyone else? And I think that's the wonderful thing about motherhood. Whenever you enter it, even if I wasn't a mother, like whenever I encountered kids and babies, and I would, you know, make those little faces at them, and when they smile, I'm like, "I'm accepted, yes," or "They like me, they really like me," because kids don't lie. I mean, you know, they're brutally honest. And now that I'm in, you know, motherhood, and I go, "I love you," and I just wait for them to say it, and they don't, and I'm like, But when they do, I'm like, oh, she said it. And without me prompting, she's like, I love you too. It's like the sweetest words ever. And so that's the same thing with the Lord. You know, he whispers it to us. You're doing great. You're doing good. But it's up to us to listen to it, to believe it, to keep going. And so with that, I'm going to close. I'm trying to not stretch it out too long, but we're going to eat milk and cookies really soon. But I just want to exhort you guys and encourage you, if you are in the season of brokenness, that there is hope and there is faith. And I can see at the end of it, you're going to be so much more stronger and you're going to be so much more brighter. Because I think when you see the older people who have been walking out with the Lord, like Mike Bickle, dang, I want to be him. But do I really want to know what he had to go through? Like, we see him right now and we're like, yeah, I want that. Like Job, he had everything restored to him. You're like, yeah. But then did you see what he had to go through? Same thing with David. He had all this riches and glory, but he was in a cave with stinky other men. And, you know, someone was after his life. You mean stalker. There was a mean stalker named Saul. And so every time you think, hey, I want to be like that guy, I don't say that anymore because I'm like, wait, let me read a little more about that person. And you see the end of their life, everything that the Lord gave to them. But then you have to read everything up to that point. What did they go through? How did they go through it? How long did they go through it? And again, the promise on David's life didn't even start until, 20 or so years after he, you know, again, was prophesied that he would be the king. And in saying that, again, I can't wait for the ones that I have seen in their darkest moments when I get to celebrate with them, because God has answered their desire. I think I will cry more than they will cry on that day, just because I'm like, see, we were sweating it, and look at it, it happened. And I mean, I think that's the beauty of it. When you walk out the stuff, all the dirty stuff with someone else, the broken, how rough it was, and you see them, and then the Lord breaks through, and you get to celebrate in that. That's the fun part. And I think that's where in the word it says, we'll weep when we will mourn with you when you're mourning, and we will be happy when you're happy, because we feel it in our hearts. We carry some of that too. We can't carry all of it, but man, it's on our heart. And I want you guys to know that, those of you who are in the community, like lead team, we hurt because we see how much we're hurting as a church, and we wish it was different, but it's kind of like, well, we signed up for the fasted lifestyle, so here we go. And again, the beauty of brokenness, it's the Lord. It's just the testing of your faith. It's for a season, and it's just to humble you, make you stronger, and make you just run that much harder for the Lord.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.